You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California is one of the top wine producers in the world, rivaling France, Italy, and Spain. But the industry and the wine culture is facing a confluence of hard realities. Younger generations, 21 and over, aren't turning to wine like their elders. Inflation isn't really helping much. Production-wise, there's an overabundance of grapevines. Plus, there is also some competition from the cannabis industry. Our resident wine expert, Rick Cushman, joins us with more on the why and what can be done, as well as why we're rounding the corner to the best time to show tasting rooms a little love. Nice to see you, Rick.
Hey there, Ricky.
Good afternoon. Okay, so in preparing for our conversation, you led with a pretty provocative question. What is wine's future if no one is drinking it anymore? Are we approaching a wine apocalypse?
Well, not exactly, but then for some folks, maybe. And what it is, of course, in reality, lots of people drink lots of wine, but not to the levels that they used to. It's down, I think the numbers last year were like 7%. And, you know, the entire alcohol industry was down. In fact, there are people who called it the worst year since, I think it was 1991. And that's one of the impacts is that, you know, there's a low alcohol, no alcohol changes. So some of that is affecting it. Some of it, as you said, was inflation. And wine's not cheap. You know, your choice when you go into a bar or restaurant is and get a beer versus a wine, wine's double the cost. So there's all of that going on. And then younger folks drinking all kinds of thing. And the only category, the only thing that is going up is the ready-to-drink cocktails, which tells you something, which is a lot of people drinking whatever they're drinking at home. They're not going out because going out's not cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a glass of wine now, you know, it can be, you know, $15, $17. You don't even know if you like it.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the problem, too. And that is, you know, one of wine's great problems is its size and complexity. And I was thinking of that when I was making my long drive over here of about 5 minutes, you know, that I don't know that much about beer, but I know I can go to a place like near us, Lefty's around the corner there on Elvis, and there's this large list of beers, many of which I don't know, but the simple descriptions, porter, lager, you know, IPA, gives you some hint. But for the rest of, you know, for wine, it's a Tempranillo, it's a Grenache Blanc, it's a Gamay. We don't even know where to start. People don't even know if Gamay is red or white, and you know a lot of people don't. And so, it's just a gigantic industry to begin with that makes mm-hmm. it so complicated for everybody. And then at that point, you know, people start saying, "I'll go the easy route."
So you mentioned that ready-made drinks, you know, they're faring a little better, but are people actually drinking less? I mean, I know during the pandemic, the height of staying at home, drinking went up.
Yes.
So is it going back down now?
Yes. Well, this is another complicated thing. So in part, yes. In part, some of the numbers are a little bit overblown because they're compared to COVID when we were buying giant caches of alcohol to do something. But, you know, WHO came out with a recommendation that all alcohol is bad for you. And there's lots of scientists that say this is wrong and they overstated it. And there's, people lobbying for their own reasons that alcohol is bad. And you know, there's a lot of studies that basically say a little bit of drinking or moderate drinking, people live longer. But then there are lifestyle studies and there's so much involved in those. So I'm not weighing in on that one. But the answer is that, you know, younger folks tend to drink less, and cost is one of the reasons, and then just alcohol is another. But overall, there is a little bit less alcohol being consumed across the world, but in the U.S. in particular.
Hmm. I mean, I think about the ads that I see online, you know, for people who are sober curious or want an alternative, like adaptogens is like, you know, this popular word now. And this also comes at a time in recent years where recreational marijuana is legal. So is that kind of poaching some alcohol drinkers?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, like with everything else, you always have to sort of look behind the curtain, you know, anybody who's, and part of all of these industries are, you know, somebody's trying to make a lot of money out of it. And so you sell an idea that is either solves all your problems or somebody else has a lot of problems. And so the anti-alcohol movement has been very good at that. And then the cannabis industry has been very low key, and it doesn't need to be because people are curious. They're curious, and you know, it's become easier to get. And And it feels like it's now completely, especially if it's you're not smoking, a completely a healthy thing to do. Whether it is or it's not, we don't actually know. Is it worse than wine or alcohol? We have no idea.
Yeah, maybe people like it because, you know, if they wake up with a headache the next day after drinking a little too much.
And then there's that.
Yeah, of course, which is not a pleasant
thing. Neither
you
or I have ever had happen.
Of course not. Yeah. Never. Never, ever, ever. Given that now you mentioned inflation, I mean, the cost of wine, you know, has always been, it's been at a higher price point. Does this also mean...
And going up, by the way.
And going up. Yeah. So is there also like a culture shift in how people view wine?
Yes.
And it's a turnoff?
Well, that's... Yes. So price is part of it. So one of the things, and this is... ever since I've been, you know, sitting in one of these chairs here in the Insight studio talking about wine, this has been one of the things that I've been complaining about, which is that wine sells itself, it sells its elitism. And I think that's a really bad thing because it shouldn't be elite. It should be fun and joyful. But it has been an attraction, and we know enough people, probably everybody who's listening probably knows enough people who thinks they're really cool because they can afford an expensive wine or they have a lot of wine or whatever it is. And wine has been that way, and that's another whole segment of how it got there. But there has been a general reaction against that in the world, and especially among younger people, and good for them. So this elitism that they're selling, the sense of complexity, and it is complex, is not ringing any bells for many, many consumers. And so it's like, back to what we were saying earlier, why am I going to put myself through it? You know, I've had conversations with wine people who say, we just need to educate our consumers. And I say, isn't that a bad business model that they have to get educated before they can buy your product? That seems exactly backwards. How about you listen to them and give them what they're asking for? You know, but that is the wine industry has not heard that yet. They're not reacting well to the fact that, as you said, people are changing their attitudes. Mm.
You know, I think about when you talk about beer and how that has a better entry point. I mean, I think about when you go to a tap room, like you can actually get a flight. You
yes.
know, you can get smaller pours.
Yes.
Obviously, with wine, there's tasting rooms. Are tasting rooms adapting to be an entry point to potential wine drinkers to kind of steer people away if they do drink alcohol to try wine?
Some are, some aren't. So one example, by the way, the one issue I would say, although they're fixing this with things like the Coravin, where you can open up a bottle and stay open for a while. But the thing about beer is that so much of beer is sold out of kegs, and, you know, or small bottles. But you can pour a whole lot of tastes, and it's not a problem. Whereas wine, you open a whole bunch of bottles, you got to pour the rest of those bottles. They're going to go bad maybe in a day, and so that is one of the things. But we were talking just before the show that about two examples, how to do it right, how not to do it right. And some tasting rooms are adjusting. And this is the lesson to the entire industry. So one very nice, well-intentioned Midtown tasting room that folded not so long ago, they were trying to be all natural, and they were trying to be different, and they were trying really hard, and they had tons of enthusiasm, but they didn't know how deep inside the circle of wine culture they were. So they weren't selling well to people. And they had like three-word descriptors. I actually brought a couple. You know, for example, they had only three choices or four choices for a white. And most people would not recognize most of those wines. There were things like Fernão Pires, which is a Portuguese grape, but they had one from South Africa. Why? And the description, Asian pear lemon verbena. I have no idea what that wine is. Is it light? Is it heavy? You know, it's things like that. And they were trying really hard, but it was so, you know, mystic and so out there that you felt like, you know, you needed to get a couple of, you know, a master somm degree, and then you can go and drink their wine. Whereas, and we've talked about them once before when we talked about their sparkling mead, and I love these folks, is Lucid down there on R Street and 10th. Great winemaker, lovely guy. His name is Kevin Luther. I'm shouting out because he does it right. First of all, he's a really good winemaker. Second, he makes all kinds of different wines, including natural wines and some high-end stuff. But they also, the place is set up like a cafe. You know, it's half wine room, half cafe. You can sit there all day and play games and not drink if you want. But they have a trivia night. They have an open mic night. You know, I was posting about that and got a bunch of people said, open mic and wine, awesome. And that's the thing that wine needs to understand is to make itself friendly. And those kinds of taste rooms, and they're not the only one, but those kinds of taste rooms are what will keep people interested. And then they eventually become either wine enthusiasts or just drink a little. But either way, you know, that's the answer.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people hang out in groups, and not everyone is into wine. Some people are. But a place that, as you're laying out and helping us visualize, like Lucid, you don't have to be a wine drinker to actually enjoy the vibe, enjoy the environment, enjoy hanging out with your friends there, and then maybe, perhaps, you'll actually end up trying their wine. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with New York Times bestselling author and wine expert here at Insight, Rick Cushman, about the challenges facing California's wine industry. So we're focusing on why people are drinking less, and I imagine that has to have an impact on the agricultural side, production. How are grapevines faring?
Yeah, not well, actually. You know, there are lots of problems in American ag, and a lot of it has to do with interest rates, because interest rates make it very expensive. And, you know, farming at any level, there's always holdover loans and things like that. But when there are fewer people buying your product, then there's less need for it. And the Allied Grape Growers, which is the group that represents California grape growers, suggest that they should pull 50,000 acres worth of grapes, which is a ton of wine. It's, you know, we're talking millions of cases in amount. But it's not just here. In Australia, the government has actually started a panel and inquiry, and they support the wine industry there, but to figure out how to save the industry because they're not selling.
Like a task force.
Yep, the task force. And in Bordeaux. And Bordeaux is the fun thing about Bordeaux, because the French are so passionate, they do everything out in the open. Bordeaux is really showing the problem. The problem is, so the big wine companies they like that there's this glut. The reason it drives the cost down. But if you're a grower, you want to get rid of your vines because otherwise you have to pay to farm those things. And that's really been part of the problem. One of the places that's actually feeling this is our friends in Lodi. And for a couple of reasons, Lodi, they grow a lot of grapes.
The Zinfandel capital of the world.
They kind of are. But they also grow a lot of grapes for a lot of other wines in other regions, including Napa. And the problem is, so those folks aren't getting, you know, they're not selling as much. But the Zin that they grow, a lot of them, is what's called head trained, which means that the vine itself is just sitting there. It's not on a wire that you see. So you don't get those really neat lines going down the landscape, which makes wine country look so beautiful. Instead, you have these little bushes.
But is that like old vine Zin?
Yeah, those are old vines for sure. And some less, but usually. And it's one of the ways to grow Zin. And with old vines, you definitely need to be picked by hand, which is very expensive. So you're paying more to farm, and fewer people are drinking it, those old vines are at risk.
If you're going to actually pull a grapevine, I mean, is there I know there's a financial impact in that you're not producing and you're not getting money, but is there actually a cost to remove the grapevine?
So the estimate averages out at about $2,500 an acre, which
Yikes.
Is not cheap. So now you're stuck if you're a farmer. And, you know, because you have to pull the vine, you have to grind it, you have to get rid of it. Yeah, you have stakes in the ground. If you're going to farm something else there, you got to get those stakes out. You know, there's just a lot of work involved.
Hmm. Are wine growers, I mean, California's ag industry is diverse. Are they pivoting to other crops?
Some are. And they're growing all kinds of things. One of the things that they're growing in water-stressed areas like Southwest Central Valley is agave. So maybe our tequila.
We have had an agave producer who made an agave spirit there in Yolo County.
Yeah, it can't be tequila because it has to be from the tequila region, but an agave spirit. Exactly right. Yeah, and you know, and so there's pistachio trees is another crop, because although pistachios need a lot of water eventually to thrive, they also can withstand drought well. So that's, you know, on a bad year, you don't have a crop, but at least you don't lose your plants.
Mm.
So, and those are a couple. And some places are letting it go fallow, and there's all kinds of issues going on.
You know, if you are advising someone, because obviously that trickles up to tasting rooms, actually buying bottles, you know, you want people to be exposed to wine, you want them to enjoy wine if they drink alcohol. How would you advise someone to get people to open up to drinking wine?
So the first thing you do, and this is always hard, this is hard for anybody in any industry, is you got to think about who you are. How deep are you inside the wine world? Think about somebody that you know that knows nothing about wine, and how do you talk to them? And, you know, and make it joyful. Remember, there's no wrong answers. And this is, these questions happen a lot. You know, somebody wants to drink a buttery Chardonnay and people roll their eyes. Look, if somebody wants to drink a buttery Chardonnay, give it to them. If somebody wants to drink a lean Chardonnay, give it to them. Don't make fun
of
them.
My dad puts an ice cube in his red wine.
And what do we care if you're in the wine business? Because he's drinking wine and he's happy. Why do they have to drink it the way you do? The next thing is, and this is a thing I've been preaching for a long time, and I have science behind me on this, is don't use tasting notes. And certainly when people walk in and you start to pour them a wine, just don't give them flavors. But the Cornell has this school of hotel administration. And they do this study somewhat regularly, and they have found that tasting notes hurt sales in little wineries and big wineries. And the reason is because if you describe a wine and people taste it and they don't taste those things, they think the wine must not be for me. So don't tell them, don't describe flavors, but when they come in, ask them about themselves, ask them where they've been, ask them what they like. So if they drink wine, ask them what wines do they like, and then find them. And then if you're going to describe your wine, sell the romance of it. Describe the vineyard. Don't tell them about the soil or the trellising. They don't know what whole cluster fermentation is. Just tell them this. It's a really pretty vineyard, and it's up on the hillside. And if it's yours, point to it. If it comes from somebody else, say we have this. You know, whatever it is. You know, because people love wine country. I love wine country, and that's one of the things that wine that going to wineries are good at selling, which is their sense of place. So sell that. Let folks know where it comes from, and. You know, there's this sense in all food now where we're looking for natural, right? And natural wine's complicated, and some places good, not so good. But let people feel the nature of what you're mm-hmm. doing, and then let them enjoy it, and don't tell them they're wrong.
Last 30 seconds, I want to end on a promising note. Why is now spring a great time to try wine?
Because of what you just said, spring is great. But, you know, because the tasting rooms aren't busy. And it's really pretty, and it's getting warm, and but plus new wines are coming out. So like the new, this where we're 2024, the 2022 reds and 22 reds are coming out. The whites from last year, which is going to be a great year, are coming out. So there's a lot of new wine to taste, and the rooms aren't busy, and they will be thrilled to see you.
Rick, as always, it's a pleasure. Learn a lot.
Always my pleasure.
That is New York Times bestselling author and wine expert Rick Cushman discussing the challenges facing California's wine industry and why now is a perfect time to show tasting rooms a little love. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.